Hey everybody, welcome to the Smoke and Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Mack Weldon, where their mission is simple, to make sure all your basics and beyond are smartly designed and that shopping for them is easy and convenient. You see, Mack Weldon was upset at how annoying it was to choose, buy, and enjoy underwear, right? So they started from scratch. They engineered their own fabric, they engineered their own designs, and the fit is in the details, so they obsessed over every stitch and seam until they reached their definition of perfect. Mack Weldon is a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. They have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor, which is great if you're traveling and you like packing light, or if you go to the gym, or if you're like me and you live in a car. You know, if it's me you're talking about shopping for, I like very soft things. You look through my wardrobe and you consistently find soft stuff. And Mack Weldon has the soft stuff covered. High quality and soft typically go hand in hand, which I appreciate very much about Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com. Use promo code SMOKINGTIRE. Let's go to MackWeldon.com and use promo code SMOKINGTIRE for 20% off your first order at Mack Weldon. We're also brought to you by Blue Driver. The Blue Driver scan tool is the easiest and most effective way to understand your vehicle. Just plug the Blue Driver sensor into your car or truck, open the Blue Driver app on your phone, and boom! In seconds, you're learning about any issues your vehicle might have. Not only can Blue Driver tell you why your check engine light is on, it can find hidden issues that can normally only be detected by professional mechanics tools. Best of all, after you discover a problem, Blue Driver will suggest verified fixes for the issue. Then you can fix the problem yourself or head to the garage armed with knowledge. Either way, you're going to save time and money. Blue Driver is powerful enough for a mechanic, but easy enough for anyone to use. That's why it's the best-selling scan tool on Amazon. Order one for yourself or give it as a gift. The holidays are just around the corner, and Blue Driver makes a great gift for the auto enthusiast or DIYer in your life. For a limited time only, take advantage of the special offer and visit BlueDriver.com/TST. That's BlueDriver.com/TST to get 10% off the Blue Driver today at BlueDriver.com/TST. And we've got the ThinkWear Dash Cam. Their latest and best dash cam, the U1000, is now available. Able to capture clear and crisp videos of your drive, the U1000 is the very first two-channel dash cam in the world to boast a native 4K UHD front cam and a 2K QHD rear resolution. In addition to its amazing video quality, the U1000 can also save you money with its speed and red light camera alerts, or make you a safer driver with lane departure and front collision warnings. With convenient remote live view and parking impact cloud alert features, you can instantly check on your car or be notified of potential hit and runs. The U1000 and ThinkWear's full range of dash cams are available online and in-store at ThinkWear.com, Best Buy, and Amazon in the U.S. and Canada. But check it out. Go to ThinkWear.com and use code SMOKE20, that's SMOKE20, SMOKE20. You'll get 20% off any regular-priced ThinkWear dash cam. Code SMOKE20, SMOKE20, will get you 20% off any regular price ThinkWear dash cam at ThinkWear.com. Lastly, it's about race chip, folks. Is your car turbocharged or supercharged? Take advantage of the fact that manufacturers are leaving it on the table, people. Race chip is from Germany. You get it at racechip.us. Here's what you can think, what you can look forward to with a race chip. Healthy increase in power and torque up to 30%. You've got better fuel economy as well. This is where your computer controls really matter in your car, folks. They do more than 30 dyno runs per vehicle. vehicle, plus tests on the racetrack and the Autobahn, right? RaceShip is TÜV approved. It's harder to get that than to get approval in the U.S., and TÜV is definitely, is usually accepted in the U.S. It's plug and play, 15 minutes it goes in. They don't change any of the engine protection mechanisms in the car. They don't modify the ECU itself, and if you want to take it out, it's easy. You go right back to stock, just a few minutes to uninstall. Okay, you get up to a 5-year warranty and 30-day money-back guarantee. Here's what you do. Go to racechip.us. That's RACECHIP.US, racechip.us, and get use code SMOKINGTIRE, code SMOKINGTIRE, all one word, to get 10% off your order at RaceChip. Code SMOKINGTIRE at racechip.us. All right, folks, on this episode of the show, we've got Ant Partridge and Helen Stanley of the Goblin Works Garage series on Discovery Channel. These guys build cars, they build bikes, they race cars and bikes, they flip cars and bikes. They have a pretty cool gig over there. If you know how to wrench, this is pretty much peak gig. They just get fun project car after fun project car to play with on camera. It is quite delightful. Helen Stanley and Ant Partridge of Goblin Works Garage are on the Smoking Tire podcast.
Woo! Okay, it's the Smoking Tire motherfucking podcast, folks. Welcome to the studio. We've got Ant and Helen from Goblin Works Garage on Discovery in studio. Ant Partridge and Helen Stanley, what's happening? Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome, yeah, both thanks of
you.
For
get close to your mic. Put the mic wherever. Yeah, put the mic wherever you want, but you got to stay kind of close to it. I'm sorry I made it difficult for you by the chair leaning back. You can follow Ant at I am Mr. Partridge on Instagram. I am Mr. Partridge, and Helen is Helen Stanley official with no punctuation. What's up, kids?
We're excited to be here.
Are you?
Yeah.
I don't feel it. No, I'm just kidding. What's
that's
going on?
That's because I'm British. This is about as excited as I can.
That's a good point. Yeah. You know, that's literally peak excitement for you guys. If you don't get excited about things, you did a good job faking it. I watched you drive a modified 944 turbo in an episode at Anglesey Circuit, and it looked like you were having a pretty good time.
Yeah, that was good. That's a really good circuit as well.
It's the best.
Yeah. I passed my race license to kind of prove that I could drive that. Unfortunately, they cut out the show. But
what, you going to racing school?
Yeah. I did my race license to sort of prove that I could drive it. Then I drove the two.
Well, see, awesome. They cutting it out of the show is not the, it's that doesn't really even matter, right?
No.
Because what matters is production paid for you to go get a comp license. Like, that's what really matters.
Yeah.
Like, I once did a segment for a show where we went to a rally school. Right.
Nice.
In a Dirtfish rally school in Seattle. The best. Love it.
Yeah.
Had the best. And I convinced producers that I must have a Peltor rally helmet with comms and a carbon fiber Hans device in order to do this rally school for authenticity. They threw the entire film in the trash. Stupidly, I might editorialize.
Yeah.
But for 10 years, I had a Peltor. And that is the most important part of that by far. Like $1,800 worth of gear. On the house.
Nice. Yeah.
So you got a comp license on the house.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's really fantastic.
Good. Yeah.
How did you talk them into being the one who got to do that? Or was it their idea?
I was going to do my race license anyway. Well, in fact, we both were. Mm. And then they just sort of said, can you hold off doing it? We'd like to do it on the show. I was
perfect.
Like, okay,
yeah.
Fine.
That's what the scam is.
Yeah.
They don't pay anything, but the fringe benefits are brilliant.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And then I did it, nailed it in a day, and then they cut out the show. I still got to do it.
It's
awesome.
Okay. And what have you scammed out of Discovery?
If I made a list, we'd be here all day. We need another podcast to... I think there's about 35 helmets. My sister stores my helmets.
Nice.
She's like, listen, do you have any more helmets? And they're all like carbon fiber, nice helmets. And I've just like, another helmet. They just keep coming. But the production, unfortunately, they know that I'll just get on a motorcycle and race anything. So they're like, we're not going to. They sent me once for season one. They sent me, they were a bit scared. And they're like, have you ever drag raced a bike before? I'm like, no, but I've ridden one since I was like 5.
How hard could it be, Clarkson would say.
If you have a friend with a bike, you've drag raced before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I No. So they're like, oh, we'll send you to drag school. I'm like, okay, cool. So I show up to a drag strip in the middle of nowhere, and all they'd done is rent me a GSX-R 600. And I showed
just
up.
Stock rental.
Stock nice. Rental. It was a 91.
Oh.
I'm
oh,
like.
It's new and. What year is this? This year?
This was 3 years ago.
Oh my God.
So it's like.
You can still rent like a 91 Gixxer from
somewhere. That's what I thought. I'm like, are you serious? So it's this like drag club.
That's either going to be the best or worst rental motorcycle on the planet, right? There could be nothing in between.
So I did two runs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the first run, because it's normal wheelbase, no stretch swing arm, no nothing, I just kind of pegged it. Wheelie, like, you know, for the first 100 feet. And I'm like, okay, well, this is just a...
That's probably not the correct strategy.
Yeah.
Exactly. For a good time.
Yeah, exactly. And then the third run, it broke. And then the guy's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm missing a part. And he'd wired it all up, like... Really
fucking
badly,
hell, dude.
So then, finally, they lent me a, what they lent me? They lent me a shit. Can't remember. But it had
more or less janky than the Gixxer.
It was less janky, but it was still like it was an old Suzuki. It had nitrous on it and it had a air shift. So that was a bit better. But that's literally all they've ever kind of paid for me. And then. After that, they're just like, just go race. I'm like,
well, that's okay.
Yeah,
I mean, someone I saw in the one film, someone gave you a Ducati to like paint mildly and then go race up a hill climb and ride into the grass. That was something.
Yeah, see, that's another kind of perk, I suppose. I do end up with a lot of motorcycles at the end of the.
You get to keep that bike.
Well, I put
Did
all
you
my
keep that fucking thing.
I kind of put my own money into them because the production have a certain budget. That they put in.
Uh-huh.
And if I were to just spend $5,000 on a bike, you wouldn't get much of a bike.
Right.
You know, you get a paint job and a new set of tires. And Ducati aren't going to, you know, donate a bike for the show if they're not going to get something spectacular.
Of course.
I get a bike a little bit cheaper. They get a cool bike, but I got to put the money in.
Yeah, so okay.
I get a discount on a really
cool
custom
it.
Bike. You know?
They give you, it's like a dollar bike.
Yeah.
It's like you do if you were a SEMA builder or something and you got media, you get the car and you put your own money into doing something, you know.
Exactly.
You got a $25,000 Mustang and you put $100,000 into it. Well, guess what? That's your Mustang now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's it's kind of like that because I
But that's not such a bad deal. It's a pretty good hustle still.
Yeah, but at the end
gotta
of it.
Got to admit.
So it's kind of like first world problems, you know. I'm broke now, but I have a ton,
right.
I have a ton of cool custom bikes.
Well, it's the same thing that happens like with people who do what I do. I have managed multiple side hustles, so I like have kind of found a way to actually earn a living doing this. But if you don't manage side hustles and you don't have project cars where you can get those perks and stuff that, then it's sort of like the press launches, right? You
exactly.
don't, well, I don't have any money, but like I flew to the Seychelles Islands to test drive the new like V6 Cayenne. Like, all right, whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's folks that on both sides of that. It pays in perks.
It's,
you know?
It's a tough balance. We're kind of trying to find because I've used to do a lot.
And no
of
one thinks you're complaining, by the way. What we do on this show is we just dive inside the what it's like to like be on and make these shows and do these jobs and like this is what it's like. Like we get cool toys. There's not much money in it, but you get your side hustles going here and there,
exactly.
And that's what it is. Like, so that's just what we're talking about. No one thinks you're complaining.
And let's just throw it out there. Like, TV is not an easy job. Like, I had no idea. When Discovery called me up and said, do you want to do a TV show? I'm like, yeah, cool.
It always seems like a good idea, doesn't it?
And then I was like, holy shit. I didn't know it was like 18 to 20 hours a day, 6-7 days a week. I'm like, whoa.
Well, it kind of depends. It definitely can be that. It can also be a totally different type of work. And I just saw it done really. I just went up to San Francisco and watched them film an episode of Guy's Grocery Games. You know, Guy Fieri. He has a cooking show.
Yeah,
I've never seen such an efficient film crew in my life. It was amazing. He was a showrunner too.
He
was the showrunner, the director, and the host.
Okay,
it was extraordinary, and it was slick. And they have like 6 hour days. It was not because they're lazy, because they have a system that's, I mean, it's a lot more predictable probably than building a car.
That's the problem, because there's two jobs there. There's presenting TV and then there's building cars and bikes.
If you're doing the real work,
exactly.
Then it gets it's real work.
So you've got to do the kind of like the half-ass kind of work, you know, where you make something half, and then you've got to finish it because it's got to be done for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I mean. So literally, you present TV and kind of like do it for TV.
Yeah.
And then everyone goes home, and then you're still in the shop till 2 a.m. you know. Hammering things and welding things and getting things done, you know, for the next, you know.
But also with the cars, like you have that with the bikes. All the bikes, apart from my one,
yeah,
are all new. And then with the cars, so obviously they're the issues with the bikes. And then with the cars, because they're classics.
Oh my God, rusty bolts.
Right, and, yeah. You never know what you're going to uncover.
Yeah.
And you'll take a panel off and think, oh Christ, I didn't realize that was there. So you can't. You can map out a plan and you can sort of write as much down as you want, but at the end of the day, once you start taking that thing apart, it could all completely change.
Oh yeah. So. That reminds me, we haven't even like we sort of dove in head first. Which one of you wants to give the summary of what Goblin Works Garage the show actually is? Because there's cars, there's bikes, there's building, there's race, there's a lot kind of going on.
Yeah.
You talk a lot, so you can do it.
I do kind of ramble a lot of shit. So Goblin Works was a brand back in, I don't know, about 70 years ago back in the UK, and they used to make teasmaids. I still don't know what a teasmaid
What's
is.
What's a teasmaid?
Exactly. I think it's like a little
hang
cart.
Hang on a minute, I'll tell you. It's very English.
Okay.
So you have it by your bed, you put an alarm on, and whatever time you put the alarm on, it starts making tea for you.
Oh, okay. An automatic tea brewing machine.
Exactly.
So it's like American coffee
pots. No, we had that. It was called Mr. Coffee.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the American version of that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they used to make those, and then out the back door in the factory, they used to make parts for the military, for turbos and
that's awesome.
Castings for...
we had a company like that called Mr. Coffee. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to learn that Mr. Coffee was like selling weapons to Iran.
So it's kind of one of those. And Jimmy had found this casting, the other guy who's on the show with us. He'd found this casting when he was looking. He's kind of a bit of a geek when it comes to jet engines. He loves jet engines. So he was trying to find
some sorcery, right? Jet engines.
I have no idea. I see a lot of work for a little gain sometimes. You know, I've seen guys on drag strips doing 5 miles an hour, making a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And just like...
Because they know the secret, which is that cars that shoot fire are better than cars that don't shoot fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
And so they've really just leaned into that. That, you know, that jet semi truck thing? What's it called? It's got a fun name. Afterburner
something
like that. It's just like just truck with three jets on it and just, you know.
It does a 20 second.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay.
But so anyway, he'd found this casting and it said Goblin Works in the casting, so he kind of looked it up, and it was his company, and so we thought we'd kind of resurrect the name.
That's a cool story. I like that. That's a good. That's a good resurrection.
Bring this old British brand back into like no one owned it, so Jimmy kind of bought the rights to the name.
And, were you guys a shop before there was a show?
Not collectively.
Oh, okay,
no.
Yeah.
Separately, we all did things, but just not together as Goblin.
What's your Helen, what's your background like in motorsports or fabrication or
fashion?
Seem like you know what you're doing. Fashion.
I come from fashion.
Really?
Yeah. I worked for 10-12 years in the fashion industry, but I always loved cars, like obsessed with cars, and kind of used to work on little bits of my own project.
Uh-huh.
And I just got sick of it. It was just so vapid, and I used to go to Fashion Week and I was just like, what the hell is this?
That
what
makes
am
sense.
I doing here? So I just kind of I went freelance for a bit and then just jacked it in, and then my partner at the time and I started a custom garage and did some cool stuff, and then the production company found
me
and said, do you want to be in TV? And I said no initially. I was like, no, I'm too busy.
You have the TV look for you know what I mean? For a woman who works on cars, it's like, of course, every production company is going to be beating down your door. Seriously, if you were doing what you do in L.A., I have a friend who's a garage, Amber, GI Motorsports. She should be on the show, actually. And she's a beautiful woman, blonde hair, you know, and gets her hands dirty, works on cars, and like... They are beating down her door to do reality TV. Yeah. It's just like, because your audience has to be 80%+ men, right?
It's 95.
95?
My personal audience is 95%.
If you look at her Instagram, it's like,
Mine's 98, so ha! Ah. Because I capture the gay ones, too.
There we go.
Okay. You know, you lose that 3%.
Yeah. Right.
I get the twinks looking for the bears. You know where to find me, guys. You know what's up. Got some emails. What did you do in fashion? What was your, did you have a line or something?
No, I was a visual merchandiser. So it was wicked.
It's a fun job.
It's awesome.
Explain what that is, because people have never heard of that, and I have, and I know how cool it is.
So it depends who you're working for, but so it was window design, everything basically that you see in the store.
Displays,
everything visual, music, smell, everything. Where the furniture is, how the mannequins are kind of styled. It's basically selling things using aesthetics.
It's such a cool job. It's like you're designing entire rooms and like spaces and experiences,
yeah.
But you can also do, like, I used to do furniture photography. I majored in photography, so I shot a furniture catalog once.
That's cool.
And
that's
really cool. Furniture stylists, like, you can't believe that this job exists. They go, when you put the couch on the white seamless and they're setting up the shot, right?
Yeah.
These, like, women come in. They don't have to be women, but they were when I was there.
Yeah.
They come in with, like, the needles, right? And they're, like, checking every thread on the couch and lining up every tassel and puffing every... And these people make, like, $300,000 a year, and they do this all day, just making sure that couch looks perfect. And it's, like, they come from the visual merchandising background. They're just, like, the super, like, Rain Man nerds of the thing.
You end up with such a... eye for detail, and because you kind of work with branding, with marketing, with the designers, with retail, you learn an extraordinary amount about selling using aesthetics. And so people don't see the connection between fashion and going into cars, but classic cars in the UK, it's a very sleepy industry, it's very old fashioned, it's still very sexist. So I kind of, with the workshop I had at the time, I just wanted to inject some life into it and just literally light a stick of dynamite, shove it up their arse, and just kind of say, look, we can actually do some cool stuff with these cars.
That's super interesting. What was it about the style of cars that had to change? Was it the style of cars or just the sort of...
They really like stock.
Yeah, yeah.
Original,
fully restored
in the UK. There is a custom scene.
There's a big purist scene in the UK.
Yeah, and there is a custom scene that's kind of like a modified
light resto mod.
Yeah,
kind of.
But if you compare that to what's going on in America, specifically in California, it's like a country mile apart. So
do custom here.
Exactly.
It's just here your car is your outfit. It's your clothes.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
like basically like you don't. It's not like you live in your car, but you're like you spend so much time in your car. Like you're taking it with you to places. Like people don't really give a shit about their houses here. It's like your car.
Exactly.
Your car is like a lot more important than your crib here.
It's an extension of your personality.
Yeah.
So that's what I was sort of trying to kind of inject, and that's what we try and do in Goblin as well. I mean, people hate us. Like, they hate us for what we do.
Modifying cars?
Yeah, we get some good haters.
We've got some great people who love what we do, and we've got some people who literally...
Well, have you done... I mean, I saw you guys take the entire body off of a 944 Turbo, you did it to make the thing go faster. You were trying to build a track car, and it seems you succeeded. I think 12 seconds a lap or something is pretty fucking impressive. But like, I imagine there's probably a lot of people that were like, you just made one less clean 944 Turbo for the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly what we get. Yeah.
You know what? That argument fucking sucks. Fuck those people, because if you decide that you need to be the keeper of 944 turbos, buy fucking all the 944 turbos.
Yeah, yeah.
Put all your money into 944 turbos. Buy everyone or whatever the car is. Like,
exactly.
If you want, you know what I mean? You don't really get to tell other people what to do.
Okay.
Like, it's like, if you want to be the keeper, like, be the keeper, but don't fucking tell me.
That's the problem with the internet, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just because, like, if you see how many the viewing figures of the show, and then you see how many people actually comment on things.
1%,
like, if that,
1%,
you know what I mean?
And then
the smaller percent of those who are actually haters.
The internet's internet. It's like, I when I figured that out, it was like, you know, all these comments say, and it's like, bro, Yeah. Comments are 1% of the viewers, and haters are 1% of the 1%. Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is like six people just saying shit over it. Like, get the fuck, forget it. You know?
I quite enjoy them. You know what I mean? I'll kind of, like, some dude went on my Instagram the other day and just hated on, like, a bunch of pictures and told me I suck and that I rape cars and engines.
Mm.
And I'm like, cool. And I'm like, you had a really weird way you of know talking. What? So I'm like, nice, buddy.
The block button is your friend?
Yeah.
I block everybody. I probably got 3,000 or 4,000 blocked people.
Yeah.
And how many of those do I wish I hadn't blocked? This many.
Yeah.
I've never once in my life regretted blocking somebody.
Yeah.
Even people I blocked accidentally. That's fine. That's okay with me. I have no concerns about those people either.
Yeah.
They weren't going to say anything productive anyway.
Yeah.
And they can still view.
Yeah.
You can block people and they can still view. They just don't comment.
Yeah.
Which is great. Keep your, go tell someone else I suck. Yeah. That's what I want you to do.
Yeah.
I turned off comments on my Instagram for a while.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was great. I'm really considering going back. It was great. I didn't lose any subscribers. I didn't lose any sleep. I didn't lose anything. And I started reading books.
Yeah.
It was
awesome.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of books. It was great. And I should turn them back off. What's your story, Ant? How did you end up on this motley crew of goblins?
I used to play with cars and bikes as a kid, like growing up in Canada. And nothing.
I was going to ask where the fuck your accent came from.
Your accent is up.
Your
like
accent is. You go from American to English to Irish sometimes.
Yeah.
I wrote in my notes when I was watching your episode, hearing this dude say quid is weird.
Yeah.
That's what I.
Like, you should see it. Like, because obviously they write a little script for us on the. They don't really. We don't have to say what they put, but they just kind of. They put it there so we can kind of have a guide. So they need
you guys
the information.
Just hit the beats. Just hit the beats. Script editor says hit the beats.
Yeah. So, but whenever they write script for me, they always like try to like imitate the way I speak. And like, but then they'll throw in a bunch of English words and I'm like bonnet and boot and, you know.
And
like,
you just say that shit.
And because I'm like fucking, Ron Burgundy, you know what I mean? I'm like, fuck you. I'm going to read what you write.
No, here's the key. The key is when they go, just one more and do it this way.
Yeah.
Never. Because that's the one they're going to use.
Yeah.
Say it how you would say it.
Yeah.
But then just do one where you say it how we would say it.
Yeah.
No.
I've
seen
one
big
really
stars be like, nah, or like laugh or do some shit, or they'll do it that way, but they'll like pick their nose.
Yeah,
so it's like unusable.
Thing.
Yeah. It's really easy to sabotage
it's
those.
Like,
I recommend you start.
A little bit like that. You know what I mean? Like,
I heard you say, oh, we got it for 50 quid. I'm like, dude, this guy needs to stop hanging out in England.
Dude, there's like the biggest reason for stopping hanging out in England is got to be the weather. Like, so my background is I was born in England, and in 82 my parents flew to Canada. We stayed in Canada. I stayed there for 15 years, so grew up in Canada. Then I went to Spain. I was in Spain for 20 years, and then I flew over to England just to do the show. So I've been in England for the last like 3 years.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah, so you've earned your weird accent.
Yeah,
actually,
so it's all fucked up, you know. It's like some
Do any of your languages come out normal?
No, not really. But,
that's funny.
So I kind of, my back, like I've ridden bikes my whole life. I've always kind of fucked around with cars, but nothing on a professional basis. And then I started building bikes probably 15 years ago. And then professionally about 7 years ago, I opened a shop in Marbella. I was just fucking around with my friends, fucking up their bikes, fucking up my bike, and until I kind of got the hang of it and learned how to not fuck up bikes and make them cool.
What's Marbella like?
Marbella is very much like here, but it's like a mini Hollywood.
Really? Mini Hollywood?
It's like a mini Hollywood with a beach.
Is this what it looks like on a hill like
this? Yeah, it's just like that. Oh. That's the view from my apartment.
Fuck out of here. Wow, that's a stunning place. This is the kind of place I got to go see.
Like, it's California, but with better roads. All the roads there are brand new tarmac.
Well, Spain has the best tarmac of any country I've ever been to, actually. I was fortunate enough to drive there.
No matter where you go.
Yeah. It was like, they really care about their roads in Spain.
And
really
like,
good tarmac.
Yeah. And out in the mountains, there's no police, no cameras. There's the odd bull. You got to watch out. You come around a corner, you know, with your knee down at like 160.
What if I just Google best Spain driving roads?
Yeah.
We're going to find some.
Right, back of my house.
Is this Spain? That's not Switzerland. Where's Spain?
Type in the Ronda Road.
How do you spell Ronda? R-O-N-D-A?
R-O-N-D-A, yeah. That's like, my shop was right at the bottom of that road.
Oh, this has a very kind of Stelvio look to it.
Yeah.
I like this. This is excellent.
Like, that's the
bottom. That's fucking beautiful.
That's pretty much the,
yeah.
Yeah. So that leads right to my old shop.
Wow.
More or less.
Does this connect certain towns, or is this just a road that exists for fun only?
No, well, it kind of connects the coastline to the inland.
That's awesome. Marbella's on the coast, right?
Yeah, it's right on the coast.
Okay,
yeah.
Awesome.
So it's got a microclimate of its own, so it's just like the weather here.
And the drivers in Spain are fucking crazy,
they're insane, right?
Yeah, they're nuts,
like,
right?
Especially like bikes. Bikes are mad over there, obviously, because of the weather.
Yeah.
And so you get a lot of, especially after a MotoGP, so every guy on a bike, on a Ninja, thinks he's you know, Valentino Rossi or Marc Marquez after the MotoGP, and there'll be a new set of flowers on a lamppost up that road pretty much every weekend. Like,
do they do hill climbs and stuff here?
No, see, I tried to talk to the government, and I'm like, can we do something?
Yeah.
Like, this is an epic road. You know what I mean? And a lot of blind corners, but because you know the road, it's good. But they're blind corners, so you don't take too many risks when it's, you know, you got to pick the right time of day when there's no one on it. But because it's a main road from A to B, like big trucks use all day long, it's quite busy.
Super early in the morning, is it money though?
Yeah, super early or just like as the sun's coming down, it's perfect, like a weekdays.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it's awesome. You need to get out there.
I would like to go drive that road. That looks beautiful.
But like that road leads you to better roads. That like
they usually do.
Yeah. Everybody loves that road because it's quite famous. It's like one of those 10 roads you got to drive before you die.
It's like the Route Napoleon or one of those kind of.
But like I said, it's all blind corners. But once you get up to Ronda and at the back of Ronda, then it's like canyon carving, and you can see five corners ahead of you.
Yeah, I saw some of these other photos have a much like wider kind of perspective, like this one.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I've never been
some open sweepers.
Yeah, it's just tons of sweepers, and you go out there in cars. Like me and some of my friends have quite quick cars. They come out there and we chase each other, bikes and cars. We'll go three or four guys on bikes and three or four guys in cars, and we'll just have a. It's literally. Our own racetrack up there. It's absolutely insane.
It looks awesome. I mean, driving in Europe is so fun in general. They're kind of spoiled, but like we also, have you guys spent any time in our Angeles Forest?
We've been up there yet? Angeles Crest. We've only done it on a bike. We haven't done it in a car yet.
But it's pretty fucking good, isn't it?
But it's pretty good.
Yeah, and the roads off it.
Yeah, the roads off it.
Off of Angeles Crest are quite spectacular. Yeah. And the tarmac is really nice. They do a good job. We're pretty lucky in that. And those roads, you know, fortunately for us, outside of some very obvious commuter traffic in a pretty narrow window of time, they don't really connect anything useful. Yeah. And so they're pretty empty. And there's no houses up there. So if you're driving something loud, it's not like. For filming, like I can't film in Malibu because if I'm doing drive-bys and I go by the same corner like five or six times, someone's like, well, what the fuck? They get by their house. In the Angeles Forest, anybody up there.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's nice. So what's next? What's on the horizon for you guys?
LA. This is we keep coming here like every year. How many times have we been here now?
Oh, I can't count how many times.
So like since season one ended, I was coming out here and so Hell's decided to come out with me, and we were just kind of toured around. A friend of mine, Roland Sands, does an event.
Oh yeah.
He does an event. He started an event here about 3 years ago called Moto Beach. It's literally why we're here now. We come every year for that, and then that kind of joins in with SEMA.
Do you guys enjoy SEMA?
It's manic. You know what I mean? Like we went last year.
That was the first time.
That was our first time.
The first time is good. The second time, you're like, okay, I get this now. Right. And then the third time, you're like, never again.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But like we had no idea. We thought we'd just go to SEMA and we just like, you know, just go because it was just before season two started.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to go and talk to people, some sponsors, and talk to different brands and stuff so we could kind of make some deals for season two and three. And we had no idea that anybody even knew who we were here, right? And literally, we got mobbed, and we're like, oh, this is crazy. So, like, I was walking around pretending to be on the phone the whole time.
Yeah. Kind of, oh, you're learning. You'll fit right in L.A. That's a perfect L.A. strategy. Yeah.
I was like, this is insane. Like, how like, a great show. We're like, because in England, no one says anything to you. They just walk by you, and you hear mumble, oh, that's goblin works.
Don't they just talk shit about you behind your back when you walk by? They go, oh, I love the show, and then fucking go at all.
But here everyone's really positive and we kind of got mobbed, and then
this hard to go to meetings, isn't it, when that happens?
Exactly.
That people are so nice, but you're like, dude, I'm just trying to get to the Magnaflow booth. Fuck.
And I'm bad enough anyways, because like, well, she'll tell you, I will like, if I stop and talk to somebody, it's like, ugh, it ends up, she just walks. She just fucks off.
That's the right answer, by the way. Yeah. Should
So yeah, it's quite tough to get anything done at SEMA, and I'm sure this year is going to be no easier.
I heard it's going to be a fucking disaster because isn't one of the halls closed or something?
Oh, really?
I think they've like they've done something over there that I forget the exact. They've changed some logistics that just didn't look good.
Oh, dear. Okay.
No, are you at least staying somewhere good? Just take advantage.
Flamingo.
It's actually better than you'd think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not really.
Like, Motor Trend put us up last year.
That's exactly
season.
Where Motor Trend would put you.
So we put ourselves in Flamingo this year.
Yeah, time. We kind of, well, a tool company have us for a day on their stand, so they put us in the Flamingo for one night, so we figured.
But that was my fault, because I'm a contributor at Bandai Magazine, the Japanese magazine at home, and the editor, Midge, he was, last year he came, and we missed him, so he was like, right, we need to meet up. We can't be at SEMA and not meet up.
Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, exactly, it's so hard. And he said,
very easy.
Yeah, he said, oh, we're staying at Flamingo, like, what is the train that's on rails that goes?
Yeah, there's the monorail. Yeah.
He goes, oh, that's behind the Flamingo. Let's just stay there. So that's my fault. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's.
I don't care where we stay. Like, literally, to me, a hotel room, it can be $10,000 a night or it can be $10 a night.
It can, unless there's bed bugs.
Bed bugs. Yeah. True enough. Yeah. Like,
it's not so much the hotel rooms, because they're most of them at this point. All the hotel rooms in Vegas are at a even if they're on the strip at all, they're at a quality level that is above the minimum of what TV people see regularly.
Yeah.
But it's not about that. It's about the quality of the people that you have to walk through in the casino to get to your room.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Dude, I have a new strategy for Vegas, which is I spent two nights in old downtown Vegas, by Fremont Street at the Golden Nugget.
Okay.
Awesome. It's the only place I'm staying from now on.
Yeah?
Really?
It was great. It was cheap. The restaurants were awesome. The people on the outside were just as grimy, but in a much more funny, trashy way.
Yeah.
And
more honest.
Yeah, you could just walk across the street whenever you wanted. You didn't have to deal with the escalators and the overpasses.
Right.
It was so, like, I could get on the highway, like, boom, 2 seconds on the highway.
Yeah.
It was, I cannot recommend it enough.
That's smart.
And so we should, after the show, I'm not going to blow up all their spots, but after the show, we should talk about some of my Las Vegas restaurant recommendations.
Right. Yeah, that'd be good.
There's, I have, it's like, shockingly authentic things are available if you are willing to go this much off the strip.
Yeah.
Okay.
This much.
Cool.
Yeah. So, favorite build that you've gotten to build on the series?
BMW E30.
And why?
Because it turned out just as mad as it was in my head, because a lot of times you'll kind of have something in your head and it will change quite a bit and it will evolve as you're building it because of budget constraints or
there's
the time or there's a great big bit of rot in it that you didn't know was there. But this car actually ended up more mad than what was in my head, and that was pretty crazy.
Well, that's good.
So
let me get a photo of it. Hang on, you can continue. Sorry, I'm just gonna get a photo of it.
It was just awesome. It was kind of, I love motorsport and I love the details on a race car and then putting that into a road car.
Oh, well, I certainly understand why you would have liked this. How far from finish is this?
Oh, if you go on my Instagram, there's some better
photos
of it actually finished.
Okay. I will. Oh, there it is.
It's mad. Most of the things inside of her head are pretty mad, to be fair.
It looks very somewhere between a DTM car, yes, like 80s Euro tuner. There's some like Koenig in there, yeah, maybe exactly. Koenig specials kind of thing.
There was
Mike from StanceWorks would be proud of that. Do you know the StanceWorks guys
here?
Yeah.
Mike's been on the show a bunch. Mike Burrows, he rules. This looks kind of like something that they would build. I like that very much. What did you do with the powertrain?
So it's got an engine from an E46 330 CI Sport. I wanted to put an M3 engine in there, but there was just not the budget.
Yeah, they're expensive. So, yeah. What would it have cost to get an S54 engine for that car?
In the UK,
a lot.
Yeah,
more,
a lot. More than what we had.
One of my kind of dreams.
It's got an M3 gearbox in it, though.
Oh, the 6-speed, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you got the Getrag 6. That's good. That's an expensive gearbox.
Yeah, it's got Porsche parts in it. It's a complete amalgamation of just to try and get it all to work. And the thing is, it really needs a turbo. And people kept saying, "Why don't you put a turbo in it?" But we do have time constraints. And we do have budget constraints. And it's just, I'd love to put a turbo in everything, but
I drove recently. One of my favorite cars I've ever driven was a 325 IS coupe with an S54 and a 6-speed basic. Stock S54 6-speed, just nice coilovers, nothing too crazy.
Just
it was
tight.
just really tight nice. And yeah. fast and nuts, but also easy and fantastic. And I recently drove one of these, and a guy put a brand new M3 drivetrain in one with 550 horsepower.
Insanity.
And it was insanity.
Yeah.
Although they didn't have room for a power steering pump, so they ran power steering rack, but with no power steering on it,
right.
So it was impossible to steer.
Right.
You couldn't steer it. But they were almost there, and I saw on their Instagram they're looking at some type of aftermarket electric power steering solution,
which might
help them out. I think I'm not sure who makes it, but they were working on it. But was this thing as fun to drive as it looks like it was?
In truth, it's still not finished, so I haven't driven it.
Is it yours? Do you get to keep it?
Solid.
No. You don't even have to... No?
No.
No, that's terrible that you won't have to keep that. I'd be nice if you did.
But it was a complete
It'll be in LA next year.
Yeah.
It'll be where next year?
It'll be here next year.
There's some there's some close-ups of the body kit, because that's a totally bespoke body kit on that car.
Bespoke meaning you made it?
Yeah. So with a really cool company in the UK called Fat Fender, it was put up on a platform and big foam blocks were put around it, and it was sculpted on
cool.
the car.
The old school way, no
the
clay,
way.
Just
that's
like
cool.
foam.
What do you think it would cost to have that company just do that on your car?
Well, it would have cost around 25,000
pounds. That is
pounds.
So about 30, Woo! Probably about 30 grand. 30 grand.
That's really expensive. That's really expensive.
Do
they just do this for people, or do they build race cars mainly?
That's the molds as well, right?
Oh, you get to keep the molds.
So
if you pay that much, you end up keeping the molds.
I kind of like that, actually, because if you go racing and you crash, you could just make more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you can buy the kit for this car.
Cool.
We need to develop a mold for the spoiler on it, because it's pretty massive. We haven't done that yet. But yeah, they painted the car as well. So they do. They're a custom shop.
That's pretty awesome
in the UK. And then, so it is a special car, and it's got airlift suspension on it. It's got custom wheels.
Oh, fun!
We got deleted the sunroof, deleted the fuel tank, so it's got a great big aluminium racing fuel cell in the boot.
Does it have an interior?
There's
lush interior. Yeah.
The interior is all original, apart from we ripped out the back seats to put the airlift.
Oh
in
yeah,
there.
Okay.
And then it's got two front like sports seats, so they're like bucket seats, but they recline because you've got to be able to get in the back.
Oh yeah, but they're not like it's not like it's not like full race car gutted loud.
No.
Oh, it's got that's okay. That's
it's a
good.
Car.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
is
yeah,
a
yeah.
Car.
Yeah.
Every time I've removed an interior, I've just regretted it almost instantly.
Right.
They don't
the
weigh
back.
That much, and the quiet and refinement that
it brings is welcome later. Inside there is really nice. It's all black. It's got black headliner. It's all the original interior, but it's been sort of covered in Alcantara. It's got a contrast stitch through it.
Cool.
It's got the original. It's
sounds
nice.
Like a great car.
It's a cool car.
No, cover of Fast Car magazine.
Do you know what that? I can now tick something off my bucket list because me and the car were the centerfold as well. So I'm like, I can die happy. I honestly, that was the happiest day of my life. Getting a car on the
when my Mustang was on the cover of Carcraft magazine, and it was they didn't tell me it was a cover until it showed up, and I was like, oh shit!
Yeah.
It was the best.
You got a Fox Body Mustang that's really cool.
I sold it, but yeah, after it got on the cover, it was like.
Oh,
I think it's time. No, I sold it, and to toot my own horn very slightly, I gave the money to charity.
Okay.
I
paid I paid an animal shelter's rent for a year.
That's awesome.
With the money. Yeah.
Oh, that's She's awesome.
Biggest, and yeah, I sold it no free. Reserve auction. Bring a trailer.
Wow.
Yeah, we got $65,000 for it, that's which amazing. Is fucking awesome.
Wow.
And I gave I said I was going to give half the money away, and I was into it for about 30 cash. So I actually came out great. There's a picture of it on the wall over there. And actually I have the magazine I can show you, but that car ruled, I learned a very valuable lesson, which is that it's almost impossible to unshitbox something. If it left the factory a shitbox, it can be faster or handle better or stop shorter, but it's a shitbox forever. And so I'm buying Porsches now.
Yeah.
a little spoiled.
That's how we met. We met when at Cars and Coffee, was it last year?
Cars and Coffee. I guess last year,
With my buddy Peter Brotman.
Yeah.
And you showed up in that rad Porsche with the rally lights on the
daily driver
on the hood.
Nice.
It's a daily driver. Meanwhile, it's on display at the Porsche Experience Center right now. So not this month, but that car rules. The Lee Keen Safari car. Yeah,
really cool.
Did you guys get that pop or was that my headphones?
Yeah, no, I heard a pop. Oop,
sorry, audience. I don't know where that came from. The Safari 911 is the ultimate city car. I recommend it. And if you're in Los Angeles, I recommend going to the Porsche Experience Center, where you can see it on display, and I will give you a picture in their lobby, and it is, I think it's there probably through, I don't know, November, maybe? Here it is. At least the end of October. Oh, boy, what have you done? My computer has gone on the fritz. It's nice. It's very happy in the lobby. Among all the actual fucking, there's like a real Paris to Dakar car behind it.
So cool.
And it's like, oh, there's my silly car. Hey, folks, get in the super chat if you got some questions for Ant and Helen. We're going to get to those before we wrap this show up. But I want to know your favorite build on the show, Ant. What do you got?
I got a few.
You need to do car and bike as well.
Yeah, I suppose I'll do car and bike. I think the BMW is probably my favorite build as far as builds go. But I haven't driven that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did drive, and I drove the shit out of, was the Mark II Escort we built in season one.
Okay.
And it was nothing crazy. It was just
Is there a picture of it on your gram?
I think so.
I think if not, there's one on mine, but it's quite far down.
All right, I'll find it. Don't worry about
it's
it.
It's on my website.
Tell me about this Mark II Escort.
But it was like a Mexico kind of we tore it to bits. Well, Helen crashed it when we first it was our very first day of filming.
Right. Oh no! Someone didn't learn a basic rule.
But it wasn't her fault, really. They took us. So the production go, yeah, okay, we're gonna take you to a muddy quarry where they do all the off road stuff for Top Gear.
Oh, is that where Chris Harris crashed into?
Everybody's crashed there, right?
Yeah.
But this is like pure off road. Like it's like if you had a rally car, you would still be fucked because the mud's that deep. But when it's dry, it's awesome.
Yeah,
you know, if it's wet, you know, mud bogging, great. But not in a Mark II Escort with a shitty gearbox. The gear, it doesn't even stay in gear. You have to hold the gear stick in gear or it pops out. and so we got the production company are like, okay, we want to see you rag it around there and test drive this car. So we're like, okay.
So this was before we didn't think to it.
Yeah.
This was before, so
we'll see how it goes and then we'll take it apart and build it. So we took it out to this course, so they plunked us down in this mud, so we're like, okay, let's go. So me and Hells jump in it. She's like, I'm driving, so okay, I'll jump in shotgun. So Jimmy and the production crew were up top, out, it's like a little quarry, and they're up top watching us filming from like afar. And so we do a few, they're like, do some donuts and do some of this, get some mud on the GoPros and you know, do some figure eights. So we do that, and then we covered the whole car in mud, so we couldn't see out of it, right? And we flicked the wipers on, and the pump for the washer fluid doesn't work, so it's just smeared mud everywhere. And then we're in the car, we're like, literally, we got nothing, no rags, no water in the car. So we're on the CB and we're like, hey, can you help us? We need some water. How are we going to clean the windshield? We can't drive anywhere. Like we cannot see out of any window in the car. We're fucked. We're stuck here.
Also, just to add to that, and you'll probably know this as well, when you're driving a car on TV, they like to cover the entire windscreen in camera so you can't actually see where you're going as well.
I'm used
so
to that
like,
one.
That that's... much to look out of.
Yeah. It can be a challenge. They've made me do that in real races.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I've had windshields covered in cameras in actual races. It's fucking terrible sometimes. I'm more used to it than you'd think, though.
Yeah.
I've learned to see around them sometimes. Yeah. We developed a rig back in the day that was outside the windshield. It was mounted directly on the outside of the windshield right in front of your face.
Oh, good.
It was like that. You know, it was a great angle, like through the windshield. Yeah. It was an awesome angle, but it was impossible to drive.
Yeah. So we're sat there in this car covered in mud. And so I walkie up to the, they're running out of light, right? And it's getting late. And they're like, just fucking sort it. I'm like, how? I have no, what am I going to do? Get out and lick the window? Like, I have no way to clean the window. And so they're just screaming down the walkies because they don't want to walk down into the mud, do they? And get their boots dirty. And you know, have to possibly fall down the mud hill. So they're like, just sort it. So I'm like, okay. So I jump out of the car. Literally, I'm pissed right off now. I'm like, fuck you guys. So I jump out of the car, get up on the hood, not the bonnet. And like just whip my dick out and start pissing on the windscreen. I'm like, Hells, close your eyes. And I only met Helen
that
about
doesn't
3
work
days
in America.
Before that.
America, you go to jail for that.
But I never thought I'd actually make it in the show. So I just like, I'm like,
you
what?
Didn't think that would make it in? Are you kidding me? That's a trailer.
Yeah, it is.
That's where the producer yells at you and threatens to fire you and then takes the editor aside and goes, trailer. So you don't know how TV works, my friend.
Well, I didn't. That was our first day ever filming, right? And she's in the car, like she's got her hand on her eyes, going, "Oh my god, if I would have known this is what was going to happen when I got out of bed today." And so I get off the car and I like shoot him the bird, and then obviously that got changed to a thumbs up.
Yeah. Digital.
Well, yeah.
That was a digital thumbs up.
Not digital. No, I think it was a second take of me jumping off the car with a thumbs up instead of a. Fuck you guys, left us in the mud. But we could finally see with pee clean in the window. And
that's terrible and funny.
Yeah. The worst thing is it flicked in my eye as I got off the car. She had the wipers still on, so I got muddy pee in my eye. I was like, nice.
Great.
Yeah, well, it's perfect.
The good news is it's... You know, it's pee colored in the finished product.
I think that
is it
I
supposed
inspired.
To look like it's driving through a field of pee?
It's like a subliminal inspirational.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it's driving through digital pee. It's like pixelated. Yeah. It's like
it's TV pee. It's TV pee.
I bet it didn't smell good, but I bet it drove good. Did the finished product drive
finished,
nice?
Yeah, but the trouble was when we were in that quarry, there was literally boulders everywhere. They were absolutely everywhere. It was impossible. And then off one,
and you're
end,
in
there
a foot
a
of mud. And you're in a road car with like 5-year-old tires from South Africa, so they're like rock hard, no grip. So literally, we got in the car again. We went around one corner, and she just turned, and the car just kept going straight. We're like, okay,
no steering,
we're going into that rock. Here we go, and then we crash. But she crashed it perfectly, like missed both frame rails, hit it right dead center.
Perfect.
So it fucked the wings, fucked the hood, fucked the bumper, but didn't fuck the frame.
Oh, good. Well, it's obviously fixed. I love these cars. They're so cool.
Yeah. They're so light.
Yeah. And they
so fun
did,
to
what
drive.
Engine was in it?
ZTEC.
It had a ZTEC. Oh,
cool.
It had an engine in it.
That's. I bet it was great fun.
I didn't get to drive it. You did. But.
Yeah. That's one thing about the show is, you know, like if you're building these cars at your own shop, then, you know, you build it and you drive it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You go have fun, you book a track day or you book somewhere to like proper go for a ride in it.
Yeah.
At least everybody before you get to give it away. But like on TV, it's like paper, rock, scissors, who gets to drive it. And then it goes away.
And then it's just gone.
And then we don't get to see it again. We'll see it at a show. We'll be at another show like our Capri. We've seen it at a few car shows. It's won like best in show at a few shows in England.
Oh, really? Yeah, that was
our
my
Capri
second
was pretty mad.
Build.
Let me see what that one looks like.
Helen said she wanted to die in that car.
I loved it. It was
Capris can be really cool.
We
this
put
thing?
A Coyote Mustang engine in
oh,
it.
Oh, this look. It, is this it?
Yeah. That's
oh,
it.
Wow. That looks fucking awesome. Wait, let me get a picture. Oh, that's the wrong picture. That looks amazing.
The front view is good because of the grill. It's pretty awesome.
I really like it. I like the flat dish wheels, the side pipes. That all works. Yeah, it's got a coyote in it?
Yeah, it's got a coyote in it.
That's fucking cool. Did it drive good?
Oh,
I didn't get to drive it.
It was insane. I drove it, like, I didn't drive it very far, but it was, the thing is.
Let me get the front.
It was kind of we kind of ran out of time a little bit on that and money. Because we spent so much money on getting that motor in there and trying to get everything lined up.
Oh, that's when the dude changed the wheels.
Like, the wheels cost us $6,500.
You know what? I like his choice, too. I like Jer wheels, and these sort of has some goldish sort of two-piece basket weave kind of things on them, but I think that works very well also.
But the Capri has got a lovely shape. It almost looks like a Nova or a Chevelle. It's kind of got that kind of esque American muscle car. It just didn't have the American muscle.
Well, it was designed by the same guy who designed the Mustang. It's supposed to be the UK's version of the Mustang.
Yeah, the Capri we got was bullshit. You see the Capri we got?
Yeah.
The Capri we got was basically a Fox Body Mustang with a different
a 2-liter engine.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I'll show you. It was a fucking hunk of shit. I mean, there's people who really like them. Not that. Hang on. Capri. Fox Body, this thing, and it was pretty sad looking. I think for those who have no idea what I'm talking about,
it was
basically this, which is you know, it's a Mustang with a different grill on it, different like nose cap, and then the rear hatch shape was different, and the windshield was sort of a convexed a little bit, bulged out, but that was basically it. Yeah. It was pretty sad looking.
Yeah, they weren't.
It's so ugly. I like it. She likes shit like that.
She does. She's got a very eclectic taste.
It's got a lot of it's actually really funny what happened. Like, so the Japanese were influenced by the American muscle cars, right? Like the Corolla and Celica from the 70s sort of look like miniature muscle cars, and then the early 80s Fords were influenced back by those Japanese cars. And then this thing, the Capri, now that you bring it up, like the front end looks awful lot like an early Celica. There's like a lot of Nissan in these wheels. There's really a lot of Japan happening.
There might be something in that. Maybe that should be a future build.
Maybe. You can find these things are... Because anyone in America that likes Fox bodies and is under 50 couldn't give a fuck about the Capri. You find some old guy like, oh, don't you say that about the Capri. But like people my age that like Fox bodies and we're out there, like we don't give a fuck about the Capri. We're not about the Capri at all.
I can probably pick one of those up quite cheap then.
And favorite bike before we go to our audience for some questions.
Favorite bike,
that you've done on the show.
That I've done on the show. Yeah. I think... So far, the funnest one to ride has been my Ducati Scrambler.
Mm-hmm. I saw you ride that one.
It's actually in two episodes now. I raced it at Gersten on a proper hill climb, kind of road hill climb, and then I raced it in a mud hill climb as well. It was supposed to be a dirt, but I raced it in the mud.
It's a nice looking bike. I like it.
I've taken 65 kilos off that bike. Like,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool as shit.
It's almost too much.
I rode the regular one I got as a press bike, like the stock one.
The 1100?
No, it was the 800.
So that's the 1100.
I hear the 1100's much, much better, actually.
It's kind of like a detuned 1200 monster.
Well, that's pretty cool.
But I've kind of up-tuned it back.
What's the taller one they make?
The Desert Sled?
Yeah, I'm too tall to ride the regular one.
Yet.
Oh, but will they?
I think they're going to make 1100 Desert Sled for that.
So how did you customize this one?
So that, everything other than the motor and the front part of the frame is stock. Everything else is gone. The front, the wheels, tires, got BST carbon wheels, got Ohlins, Brembos, Galfer discs, all the bodywork, the front end of it's all custom made. All the hand controls are Magura, German made.
Dumb question, because I don't know that much about bikes. Yeah. I just like to ride them around. Stock wheels on this, or steel or aluminum?
On that?
Yeah.
The stock wheels were aluminum with stainless spokes. They were spoke wheels.
Oh, okay.
And they were heavy.
Because I've driven a car where you put, I've driven a car where you put carbon fiber wheels on it, and it's like, holy shit, the difference is extraordinary.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never driven a car with carbons. But
that's amazing.
But a bike with carbons, one, it's just it's literally like people want horsepower in their motors, right?
Yeah.
And to get 10 horsepower out of a motor once you're at a certain level, it the price of that is pretty substantial.
Yeah. Now you're doing titanium valves.
Yeah, exactly. You know
was
what I mean?
That worth it?
Yeah. Like, right? Yeah. And so when I say to a client, they're like, you know, I want it to be handled great and I want it fast and they want this. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll put carbon wheels on it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, but they're like, you know, $4,000.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah, yes, exactly.
But it's bolt on. It's instant 10 horsepower, right?
Not only that, it's not just 10 horsepower. You're handling, you're braking.
Your launch.
Yeah.
If you like the wheelie, the front end is super light.
Your brake pad wear will be less because you know it's got to stop less rotating mass. Like, how does it affect the wheelie? Does it make it easier to wheelie?
Yeah, it's, you know what I mean? The front end's just light. Imagine,
does it make the bike worse in any way?
The only problem I saw with this is because I took the whole back of that bike off, people think I've got an extended swing arm on that, but that swing arm is exact same as the stock swing arm.
Oh, it's just a shortened seat.
The seat unit, I've taken that, that's like, usually hangs about 6 inches, 8 inches off the back of the wheel. And all my builds, if you notice, like I don't like to go near halfway of the wheel. I'll keep it forward of midships on the back wheel. I like really stubby back ends. That's kind of, I don't know if
that's
maybe
cool.
It's
kind style. Of
a style that
well, you visually get the extended swing arm look, but without the downsides of trying to ride around with an extended swing arm.
Changing your geometry. And, you know, Ducati are pretty good at making a bike handle well.
Yeah, certain you things know. You shouldn't, you yeah, don't need to fuck with too much.
You don't need
much.
To fuck with, you know what I mean? Like, super bikes, and they have it down, so you keep that geometry, you're good.
That's excellent.
If I've got a bike that I'm building that doesn't have that geometry, I'll try to take it back to, you know, factory race spec geometry to make the bike handle a lot better. But yeah, with those carbons, I took so much weight off the back of that bike, so I've got no engine brake. So my engine, I gear down, and the thing just locks up. You know,
really?
I'm taking the ABS and all that shit off it. So like when I was at Gersten on the hill climb, I was talking to the guys. I'd never raced there before, and so I go hammering into this corner. And they're like, because it's a tight right-hander and it goes straight up a hill. So you're like, don't brake too hard because you scrub off too much speed before you go up the hill. And then you've got no speed to get out of it.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, cool. So it starts pissing it down in rain because we're in England. You know what I mean? So I had a first dry run, which is great. And then the second run was wet. And I'm like, hammer it into this corner, hit the brakes, gear down. I thought, okay, I'll just gear down and tip in. Geared down and the back end just went I'm like, okay. So I just rode off the track.
So yeah, having a little bit of weight there could help you out in those kind of situations.
But now it's my daily road ride. Like, so, you know,
cool.
It's perfect.
Well, that's awesome.
I love it.
We got a few questions from the audience. We got a bunch. Nice. Riley says, any recommendations for affordable driving shoes? I make 200-mile trips 3 to 4 times a month in my Fiesta ST, and my feet get very tired. I don't really use driving shoes so much. Do you guys use driving shoes?
No, not really. But I must say, I like to drive in Converse because you've got support, but you can still feel the pedals. So if I'm training to drift at the moment, so I use
Converse?
No, I wear Alpine Stars, proper driving shoes. But if I'm driving daily and hooning about, I love Converse. I think they're good.
If you want an actual driving-focused shoe, Pelote was bought. The brand Pelote was bought by a new company, and they have a new factory, and they make the shoes a little differently now.
Okay.
Yeah, their newest line of shoes is pretty comfortable, actually. So would I recommend them to like walk around in all day? No, regular sneakers are better. But if they have a good roll heel, and they're asymmetric, so you have a heel toeing extra thing on the one side, so you can use those. They're good. Stew Dog says, Chevy SS with 6-speed manual or Alfa Giulia Quadrifoglio as a daily driver. Oh, boy.
Sierra Cosworth.
I do not believe that Alfa builds a car that you can rely on for daily use without it being frustrating. But that's just me, and I've said it over and over on this show. Ryukachu says, crazy fabrication question. I'm trying to have an entire Tesla Model 3 rear subframe with the suspension bolt under the rear of a Corvette C3 frame. So I'm trying to fabricate subframe mounts. What am I in for, and where do I start?
That's like
any advice?
I hand that straight over to you because I haven't got a goddamn clue.
Pay good money. Do not go to anybody cheap. If you want it to fit and you want it to work properly, go to somebody that knows their shit. Like, I don't know a lot of car fabricators out here. I know a lot of bike fabricators, and they're great, but they'll charge you an arm and a leg probably.
The car ones will too, but if you want to do some weird shit like that.
Yeah. but honestly, find someone that can properly fabricate, and you've seen their shit. Like,
yeah,
and pay the money.
If you're in LA and want an actual recommendation, I mean, I would start with EV West, but they're a place that converts regular cars to EV, and they do it very well, and they charge a lot of money, and they have a very long waiting list, and it's in San Diego. But like, I would at least start with a phone call there, and maybe they can send you someone if you don't know. But I mean, that sounds fun as shit. Like, that sounds cool. Here's where I would advise against doing that. A C3 Corvette is one of the squeakiest, rattliest fucking Legos cars ever made. It has horrible build quality.
Yeah.
Removing the vibration of an engine, which would distract you from the vibration of the chassis and body, and instead having a silent powertrain, but every bump you go over, it will sound like you threw a bucket of nails down the stairs.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is. I mean, I drove Detroit Speed's C3 Corvette, which we're talking $400,000 to build that. Full frame, the whole deal. It rattled.
Yeah.
You have no chance of making one that doesn't rattle.
We just converted an original Fiat 500 to electric on season 3.
Yeah. And how were the rattles?
They were there.
But what was quite good, because the car wasn't like a Tesla S, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like hyper fast, didn't have ludicrous mode on it. But it was like, I was worried that it was going to, you know, just sound shit, but it actually, because it's got the whine of the motor, it kind of actually sounded original, because that car didn't make much of a noise anyways, you know. It was like
EV conversions are cool. EV West, I drove a Beetle they did that was amazing, and they do a Volkswagen microbus that's like, you know, it's $200,000, but it's fast, and it's got air conditioning, and it's fucking cool as hell.
But
like I said, you can't unshitbox something. Yeah, yeah. And a C3 Corvette is a shitbox.
Yeah.
That's a horribly built vehicle. Mm. So if you remove the engine, you're really going to have some vibration issues. But RB26350Z says, what does Nissan have to do to make the Z platform great again? Should they go back to twin turbos, maybe a turbo inline six? How about they just build anything new? Anything.
Yeah. True enough, they haven't done anything.
The 370Z and the GTR both came out in what year?
Oh, I don't know.
Ooh, you got me there.
Same year, 2009.
Ago. Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Both it's their sports cars have been on sale for 10 years. What do they have to do? Anything.
Anything.
See, the GTR, I'm just not a fan of that car. I'm a fan of the performance of the car, but styling-wise,
I love that car.
You know, the old Nissans, like, come on.
I love a Skyline. They're what's up.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they kind of redid that. I just don't think they ever got it right in my eyes. But I don't know.
I'm not a fan of anything they're selling right now, but, you know, that's just me.
And people put, like, we met a kid. He brought us, we tested his Skyline with 1,300 brake horse in it. And he'd spent $170,000.
No, that was GTR.
His GTR, and he spent $170,000 in the motor.
And was it fun?
It was insane.
It was absolutely insane. I'm not allowed to drive anything.
What happens, I find, with GTRs, and this happened repeatedly over and over, is that it's so easy to make power, and people think if they add more power that it's going to be more fun.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ever happen. I've been in cars, because they have 1,100 horsepower or something, and they've had it for 2 months. They're daily driving it, 1,100 horsepower, and they go, you know, I'm going to send it back for like 1,500, 1,600. Like, who is 1,100 horsepower not exciting enough for?
Exactly.
And then you drive a GT3 RS, 450 horsepower from 2008, and you go, well, this is perfect. Don't change a thing. Yeah. Leave it. Don't touch.
Yeah.
And you go, so it's just like, horsepower doesn't necessarily translate to excitement.
No.
Jordan Klein says, I love the E30 resto mod. Are you seeing increased interest in these builds post OPF emission regs?
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Is that like American thing?
Is that what the filter thing is in the back of the Porsche I was driving? An OPF filter?
See, I guess maybe it's a California thing. I have no idea, but we don't. In the UK, you're exempt after certain years.
Yeah, that isn't like, because that's an 80s car. But, I mean, you get in the MOT, there is an emissions bit, isn't there? But I don't know.
But again, the kit doesn't stop anything. You know, there's not an exhaust in the kit. The kit is a body kit that's for sale. If you want an exhaust.
I mean, that has got the more modern engine anyway, so it wouldn't really be an issue in that car. I don't know. There's so many rules and regulations in the UK, but a lot of them are, I know over here it's a lot to do with emissions, but in the UK it's a lot to do with the wheels can't come out of the arches too far, and a lot of it is what we would think of styling things that restricts us styling wise.
Tires.
You'll get how low you can make the car, how wide you can make it.
Not so much those things, but like the window, things like window tints, there'll be little bits you'll get pulled for. To be fair, though, in the UK, and also with these...
Plates have to be the right color and right size. And right, you know, if you shrink down the license plate to make it smaller, you're in trouble.
That's illegal here, too.
But like,
you don't
shrink
a license plate?
On a bike, that's how big your plate is.
Yeah.
Like, in England, your
bike... Oh, it's a full-size plate in England on a bike?
Yeah, it's twice the size of an American car plate. So
on a car or a bike?
No, on a bike...
You have to run a car plate on a bike in England? I've never seen
all
that.
All over Europe. They're 20.
Oh,
22.
But they're squares.
Yeah.
It's a square. It's not wide. It's a square. Yeah. I mean,
22 centimeters by 18 centimeters.
Whatever.
It's pretty big hanging off the side of your bike.
I mean, okay. Can't it be on the back of the bike?
Can't
it come straight down off the tail fin? You're the one who's cutting all these fucking tail fins off.
If
you didn't cut the tail fins off, you could put it on the back of the bike.
But they look like shit.
I know.
Like, you know what I mean?
But I'm not surprised you're not allowed to bend them.
Yeah.
Well, that's not surprising in the least.
Well, in Spain, like, we used to do it all the time. We'd make smaller plates out of Perspex and get them printed and get stickers. Right? And then it was at just $100 fine. Or 100 euros.
Yeah.
And then they changed the law, and now you're fucking with a government document.
Oh, yeah.
It's like counterfeiting
money.
Yeah,
it's like faking money. Yeah. You know what I did?
You go to jail for it. If you get the wrong cop.
Yeah. I did it a couple years ago. I had a Focus RS, and the black bar of plastic that bisects the front grill is clearly meant for a European plate.
Yeah.
It's not meant for a US plate. A US plate frame looks real stupid on there. So I was like, I'm not putting a fucking US plate on that. But in California, you need a front plate.
Yeah.
So I had my friend make me a sticker copied, a photocopy of my real plate.
Yeah.
But it was like 2/3 scale, and it fit perfectly on that thing.
Yeah.
And if you just glanced at it quickly, it was legible. It was the correct colors. But if you really looked at it, you're like, is that a little smaller than it's supposed to be? But I actually had a couple cops come up to me and say that was a really like creative solution. And like, I was like, are you guys going to give me a ticket? They're like, no, that's cool. I can read it. Like, not falsifying or misrepresenting what you're. And the endorsement of a couple cops casually certainly doesn't make something legal.
Yeah.
But a cool cop or someone who wasn't a particular dickhead was like, yeah, that's fine. And so that's sort of a possible solution for us here in California as a sticker. It does kind of work.
Yeah.
Vlad wants to know, how much would you pay for gasoline that doesn't contribute to carbon emissions? There's ways to take CO2 from air, add hydrogen from water using renewable energy, and make. So if you could make a carbon neutral gasoline, I don't know if that adds up right.
Yeah,
I'm not an environmental scientist. Would I pay a premium if I could buy gas? Yes, I would. But I would really. I think it's personally. I believe it's a logical fallacy to put the onus on the citizen that just needs gas to get to work compared to people who profit from pollution. And there are enough of those people that find really interesting ways of avoiding taxes and responsibility for their actions. So I believe you should start at the top down before taxing individual citizens who just need this resource. It's not like we are addicted to gasoline. We need it. We just need it. That's how we get to fucking work and get our kids places. But there's people who pollute for profit and collect billions of dollars for the trouble at the expense of everybody else who has to breathe the air and drink the water. So I would say start with heavy industry and work your way down to consumer cars. That's all.
Yeah.
Isaiah Land says, the Tim McDonough art and Road and Track has been amazing. Oh, yeah. I've been doing some work for Road and Track, and it's been very fun. Pick up the new issue. It's on newsstands now. Weirenfelt, how did I meet Chris from the OG podcast? He was a fan. He was a fan who emailed me, and that was it. Sean Smith also loved your E30 build. He's working on your endurance racing E30 with a Honda K24 swap. Very cool.
That's
really
what
cool.
Non-BMW engine would you put in a racing E30? Non-BMW engine? I got one. The naturally aspirated 1JZ engine out of a Lexus IS.
Yeah.
You could fucking run that. I think it makes about 225 horsepower. You could run it at redline for 24 hours. It couldn't possibly give a fuck. Without the turbos, that engine has no stress at all, and it would probably fit in nicely.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
That'd be an easy
be
one.
Awesome build.
Easy.
Wow, yeah.
Or an RB.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See,
2J or RB? What do you prefer?
See, I'm kind of
Supra motor versus Skyline motor.
Skyline motor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With my lack of knowledge for, you know what I mean? I dig cars and I'm into what I'm into, and, mm-hmm. but my kind of product knowledge on cars is lacking.
That's okay. We're a car show. It happens. The bike guys, we try to do the bike stuff, and sometimes it ends up in the weeds. Blake says, I have a BMW 650 Grand Coupe with 20-inch Dunlop Sportmax run flat tires. It rides like crap. Will swapping to a non-run flat Michelin make a big difference, or should I consider smaller wheels? Yes and yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Michelin will run better than a Dunlop run flat. And also, if you go down to 19s, if it can fit
with a higher profile tire,
with a higher profile tire,
better ride.
It's anti-baller, but it will make the car ride better.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if you live anywhere new, I don't know what the where
it's America is the best I can do.
But if like my buddy in New York used to rip a tire off his BMW, Peter brought me.
Oh yeah,
he bought a brand new M5 or not M5 but a M spec 5 series, and every single time we go into the city, we'd rip a new rim off.
My dad had a BMW 7 series in New York City, and he bent 4 wheels in a year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. BMW's aluminum wheels are not very good quality, actually. Let's see. Parker says, I recently got the chance to drive a bunch of bucket list cars and found most of them were not memorable at all. What cars have you driven, including modified cars, that you thought would be great but left you wanting more? Have you guys been disappointed by anything recently?
Yeah. And you'll go, I told you so. So I don't really drive new cars. Occasionally I'll test a few for my website. Like we test drove the new Jeep Wrangler Rubicon. I had a Honda Civic Type R.
Honda Civic
day.
Type R was a bit loony.
They're fun.
That's a license losing fun little toy in England,
chuck
for sure.
Your license at the police if you want to drive that around. So I don't normally drive new cars. So when I do, I'm just very excited about buttons and things because I'm used to driving classics. I recently bought a BMW Z3, and I'm just regretting every bloody minute of it.
Really? Is this the one on your? I saw it on your gram. The silver one.
Yeah,
what's wrong with
now,
it?
It's now orange.
It's a BMW. It's a late model BMW. That's what's wrong with it.
But
it's very Pierce Brosnan, James Bond of you.
Exactly. Yeah. But the thing is, I bought it because it was pretty, and I figured that's got the E36 engine in it, which is a great engine. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, what can go wrong with that? That's an epic engine. I plan to practice drifting in it, and it is the most underpowered thing. It's still pretty. It's now orange. It looks rad.
Is it a four-cylinder or a six?
Six.
It's a six, and still not enough power.
No.
It's all right top end, but bottom end, it's got shit. It's got no torque.
Yeah.
Turbo?
Can we turbo?
I mean, you could.
That's the only way forward, I think.
If you didn't worry about money, which I should.
Yeah.
I don't, but I should. I would just rip the engine out and put something Japanese in there, yeah, just because it's so pretty, but it's
so that's
disappointing.
I've banned Helen from buying any more late model BMWs.
I understand why you'd want to. They're lovely.
They are lovely, but you got to accept the responsibility of it's like dating a woman with kids. You have to take on that responsibility. You know, that's, you buy a BMW, funny, they come with baggage, and you have to accept that. That's, you know, hilarious. They're all rotten. You know, the electrics are shit. You know, this is not going to work. You know, yeah, they're going to creak and clunk and you know. It is what it is, and they just cost you a fortune in the, yeah, end, you know.
Old cars that did not live up to my expectations. There's been a few.
Ferrari.
Oh, that's not true. I've had very good experiences with Ferraris.
I think late Ferrari or early Ferraris. Yes, like Dino's, like that. Those.
Are you
those
saying '80s Ferraris are not good for you? Is that where your line is drawn?
I was a bit unimpressed with the Mondial. I had a Mondial, uh-huh, and
Did you have an 8 or a T?
It was a. Ooh.
It's a big difference. Well, it's a completely different engine between the two cars.
I couldn't tell you. I had it for literally 2 weeks before.
Do you know what year it was?
Into a tree. You got me again. Peter Brotman, uh-huh, we bought that together. We had it together in Marbella. And then another friend of ours drove it into a tree.
Such a beautiful car, though.
But
I kind of like Mondials.
I do.
The late ones I kind of like.
We're thinking about buying one and chopping it up and making it like wide body, something.
I get that.
Because they're cheap. They're like 25 grand. You get a pretty decent one.
Yeah, they're not highly collectible as far as Ferrari goes. But if you wanted to drive one around, they're kind of nice.
But like a 308, I was driving the 308, like the iconic Tom Selleck kind of, and I was a little bit disappointed in that.
Okay, that's fine. I have been disappointed in the 2011 Aventador when it came out. Was super disappointing. I was not a fan of it at all. The my own Aston Martin when I took it on a racetrack was remarkably disappointing. I love it. I still have it. It's a very cool car, but it's a shit sports car and it shouldn't be driven like one because it's just terrible at it and it'll make you fucking hate it. And, you know, I owned, like I said earlier about tuning out of class, unshitboxing something. I think there's only so far you can go with that. And, you know, I had a DeLorean once that was the car that made me love cars. And it was so beautiful. And I really had the right one. It would look brand fucking new. And it was really cool. It sounded cool and had a great curb presence. Everybody smiled. And, but it just didn't. Not only did it not drive good, there was virtually nothing you could do to make it drive good. Yeah. It was actually a car that was beyond help.
Yeah.
And so that's a shame because they are beautiful.
They are beautiful. They are cool cars. But part of what makes them beautiful makes them unmodifiable. And so because they made bad choices at the factory, those choices were irrecoverable. Right. Yeah, which is unfortunate.
It's like bad life choices, you know, it happens. Yeah,
totally. It's like John DeLorean's actual life, really. and Jordan says those filters, the new Porsches and BMWs in the UK have filters choking exhaust and horsepower. Okay, I drove the Porsche that has that exhaust. It does choke the sound. Porsche swears it doesn't choke the horsepower. The question is there an increased interest in resto mods since they're exempt from most regulations? Mm.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't think there's a lot of people in the. I haven't seen many companies in the UK building custom new cars. Not many, you know. Other than kind of like boy racer stuff and like
Litchfield, isn't that one?
Litchfield
is one. Yeah. And what's the one starts with an M? It's not. Well, there's Mansory, but it's not Manti Racing. They do that GT2, isn't that in England?
Yeah, there's a couple guys that specialize in stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but like there's not like custom shops here that'll you can take in your Mustang and they'll put a, you know.
All right. So it may be a little while before you start seeing this. What I suspect is going to happen in America is as mainstream manufacturers start making more and more jelly bean like vehicles.
Yeah.
Even enthusiasts, we're going to see Ferrari and Aston Martin crossovers. We've already seen Lamborghini crossovers, et cetera, et cetera, right? Everything is going to start getting more and more homogenous. I think there's going to be room for the real enthusiasts to give money to people like Caterham and Ariel and and the real niche manufacturers and custom shops and someone who you know and at the very high end you know a Pagani and a, or a Koenigsegg or someone who's really got buku cash but I think that someone who wants a focused sports car will start looking places eventually besides Porsche and GM and
this is the thing like you know what I've always wondered is why. Is there not a lot of people out there building custom cars with Caterhams? You know, because like
there are. I think a lot of people
see them in the UK more, but like because they're quite ugly looking. I don't think they're very attractive cars. You know, they're kind of what they are. You know what I mean? They are fucking great.
Well, they're
great
for
race
a
car.
Very specific niche. I've driven Caterhams. I don't want to own one at all.
But if
and it's not because it didn't drive good.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because I could only think about how gruesome my own death would be if I crashed one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't. For $100,000, I'm gonna need doors made of something besides plastic, homie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't want to fucking zip my roof up for $100,000. Like, sorry. It's the same reason I'm not particularly. I understand why somebody might want an Ariel Atom.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, not fucking me. Yeah, like, yeah. I like. If I want to be that close to the elements, I'll get on a $10,000 motorcycle that's faster than this thing.
There
like, if I want to die that fast, like, otherwise, like, give me bodywork never made a car worse. I'm sorry. It just didn't. Let's wrap this up pretty soon. How do I like the new Zenith? I'm wearing the new Zenith. El Primero Defy 21. I like it. I have a watch sponsor. It's on my rotating demo. I like it. It's very good. It's very hard to read at night. It doesn't have any lume, and so it is a daytime watch, and that's kind of frustrating. Would I recommend buying a basic El Primero? The El Primeros are great movements, but they have very high service costs. So buy one and make sure it's had a recent service. Buy used. They drop like rocks the second they go out the door. Always buy a Zenith used. We're in Felt says, has Hannah abandoned the Delica entirely? I got a Mitsubishi Delica. Do you know what those are? The vans?
No.
It's a Japanese van, like from Japan.
Are they kind of like the old Nissans?
Hang on, I'll get you a picture of it. It's like a it's a boxy like a space van. Like hold on.
I think I know what you mean.
Like cab over 4x4. It's like a Japanese Volkswagen Synchro. I just have to scroll past a lot of fucking press launch photos to get there. It's this.
Yeah, yeah.
4x4, mid-engine, with low range, and it seats six. It has captain's chairs, and Hannah is not over it. Hannah is having a great time driving it. She really likes it, and when I open my business up the road, it's going to be our airport shuttle, so I'm going to take it away from her then and make her buy her own car. But she's having a lot of fun driving the Delica, and everybody who she takes for rides in it thinks it's the coolest thing ever. It's a fucking awesome little van. I dropped it off this morning. That's why I was so frantic when I got here, because I had to drop it off all the way across town, because there's only one shop in L.A. that can do the timing belt service on it. The timing belt service is like a water pump, it's gaskets, it's like all this stuff. And so I had to go across town and then take an Uber back at like rush hour. So I apologize for my franticness. Question for you guys. What reaction did you get from the purists, says Graham, when you modified that Land Rover?
Oh, crazy.
Also, you're always together. Are you dating?
I'll let her deal with you. Yeah, we are.
There you go. Confirmed number two.
Yeah.
And now, more importantly, the Land Rover?
The Land Rover. It was funny. We took it to a show, and this pretty much sums up every...
I saw a picture of it on your gram somewhere. I'm going to find it. There it is. This is a great photo.
Awesome. Yeah, Chris Frost and a friend of ours takes all our kind of photos.
You can build a road race Land Rover? Is that the idea?
See, the thing is, that needs a V8 and power steering, and then it's a proper...
It's a lot more than that, but...
But yeah, but you know what I mean?
What did you just do? Just lower it on wheels?
No. We made drop axles for it. We've notched the frame at the back and raised the hangers. The front axle is like a custom axle. We big drop axle in it. So we slammed it properly on the original frame. It was a repop, but galvanized proper frame for that brand new frame. All the bodywork's original. The only thing is, the steering and the drivetrain is shit.
Yeah.
It's just all stock, so it just needs some power. But if that thing had some power in it and some good suspension, That'd be awesome.
It could be kind of fun.
It'd be so much fun.
It reminds me of the mil-spec drift Hummer.
Yeah.
Have you seen that thing?
I have. It's
They've invited me to come drive it. I haven't had a chance to go, but they have this crazy Hummer package they do with 1,000 pound feet of torque, Duramax, and they put it in this cheapy, super lightweight, leftover military Hummer with like canvas doors and shit. Mm-hmm. And it was like the lightest Hummer they could find. Then it's just, and they put a big angle kit on it,
rear drive,
and it's a good drift vehicle.
So just to go back to the Land Rover, this will sum up pretty much how everybody reacts, all the purists react to that. So we were at the NEC Classic Car Show, which we are at again this year, where we are well hated. This is all purists. We're on the Discovery Live stage, standing in front of 2,000 people, telling them about how we're going to chop up more pristine classic cars. And so that we had that on our stand year one, and this guy walks by us in his gilet and his flannel flat cap
and a Land Rover tie
on, right? And he walks by us. And he kind of looks down his nose at us and goes, "Fucking disgusting," and just kept walking. And that's pretty much the reaction we get from purists.
Oh my God, that's fucking great, man! I love it. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
We got I am Mr. Partridge on Instagram, and we've got Helen Stanley Official on Instagram. Wait, I might have made yours go away to find my own photos. Oh, I'm sorry, Helen.
That's okay, go away. Don't worry.
Helen Stanley Official on Instagram. And, of course, these guys are on Goblin Works Garage on Discovery Channel. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us. Sharing your time with us.
I appreciate it. Open invite next time you guys are back in town.
Well, next time we should be living here.
Oh, yeah.
2020, our plan is to move here.
Excellent. Well, if you need home or restaurant advice, I'm here for you.
Awesome.
For those of you with us live, be back here tonight at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. We've got the creators of the Fast and the Furious musical parody in studio. I saw it on stage in L.A. at Dynasty Typewriter Theater. It's fucking hysterical. It's a hilarious production. And they're going to be in studio live tonight at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Everybody else, we will see you Thursday. Is that tomorrow? It is. Yeah. Tomorrow, 5 p.m., TV producer Todd Mesereau is in studio. And so it's a big week of podcasting here. That's it for us. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a connection to the internet, a microphone, and ideally, something to say. Good afternoon, folks.